All right, so hey, we're batting at the top of the lineup here. I mean, we're opening. That's pretty good. It's been a remarkable year for podcasts. There's no question about it. The title of the session is Podcasting the New Black. There's coverage everywhere. I mean, New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and a million online news sources. It's just really quite interesting seeing the momentum build. A growth business. You've seen a couple of interesting financial transactions just in the past few months. Hubbard getting involved with Podcast One, Scripps buying Midroll, NPR clearly making a concerted effort to build the podcast sector for them. CBS introduced Play.it. So a lot of activity. The arc is really unmistakable. And it's kind of like the arc, I think. We'll talk about this today with the Netflix and YouTube on the video side, now seeing this more so on the audio side. Got a great panel. These are great guys, every one of them. Brendan Monahan is the CEO of Panoply, which was launched in February of this year, and an outgrowth of the really successful and long-time podcasting effort at Slate. John McLeod is the CEO and founder of Rivet Radio, a startup. It's a news app, but it's really a whole lot more, and John will tell us about that. It's a whole news-gathering organization. And John's background is Navtech and Sony and Disney, so we'll talk about that. Rob Greenlee, been around podcasting, I think, longer than anybody in this room, and has a great passion for the sector. He's head of content at Spreaker, and also hosts his own show. When I got into the business, everybody said, hey, when are you doing your own podcast? And I said, you know, I've been in the business for 35 years, and I never did a morning show, and you're never going to hear me on a podcast. So you're a brave man for getting out there and doing that. And, yes, you've been doing it a long time. Kit Gray is the president of Podcast One, which has, of course, some of the biggest shows in the business. And I think Kit was in the business before Podcast One and somehow married up with Norm Pattiz. So interesting story there. Rob Proctor is the CEO of Audio Boom. It's a free platform where anyone can use to create and syndicate content. They have 40 million users worldwide, and he was just telling me he's got deals in other countries for development. So exponential growth just in the past couple of years. If you had asked him the question 2 years ago how much U.S. traffic he had, it would be next to nothing, and now it dominates. So congratulations on that. So let's jump in. Why now? Why is it the new black? Any of you guys?
Well, I'll start. I think,
and loudly, apparently. Yeah.
Is that working?
Right.
There we go. Well, I think what's happening is a lot of planets are getting aligned across the industries, and I think that the combination of connectivity and cloud computing, so there's a lot of technology things happening, and I also think that there is a newfound appreciation for listening that has been enhanced by the access to audio, whether it's through computing or mobile applications. But I think the biggest thing that's happening is that the cars are finally embracing connected audio, and everybody's recognizing that with so much listening in the car that there's a much bigger opportunity out there. I really think we're at the very beginning of this sort of smart audio revolution.
Yeah, I started working in the podcasting space because I was a fan of the medium, and I love it. You know, the fact that I can pause and take a phone call or pump gas or go to a meeting and then start it back up where I was listening is just amazing. And the fact of the matter is that these hosts use their social networking and their cross-promotion to grow this medium just kind of it's just very exciting. I mean, when you listen to podcasts, you feel like you're part of the community. And, the fan base just loves it. They share it with their friends and social networking communities. And it's just a great medium. It's just like when you watch TV now, you listen, you go through your DVRs or TiVos. This is just a great medium, and that's why I think it's growing.
Rob?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest driver has to be the proliferation of mobile and people choosing to curate their own experience, be that kind of in music or it's in spoken word, and actually more and more a convergence of both of those two together. If you've got an hour commute to get into work, you can curate that hour so it's actually all great content. The advertising, if there is advertising, is then in red or it's actually native as part of the experience. And you can see more and more people doing that, when you're on the tube or, actually people just linking in their car with CarPlay or Android Auto or Orpio or a whole range of different things. But the root of all of that is the mobile phone.
Yeah, I agree. The number one data trend has been smartphones and the adoption of that smartphone as the new radio is really what's been driving this. And the ubiquity of online access to those mobile phones also has made it really grow. Because 10 years ago, you had to synchronize that media file between your computer and a portable media player. And that was a time-consuming process, complicated. Now it's really easy. You just hit click play, or you just subscribe to it, and it's there on your phone anytime.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I think what you're hearing is a lot of common themes here: technology, community, all of this converging. I think the other thing is the quality of content and the nichification of that content. So this platform really enables you, whether you're a sports fan living in a different city, being able to consume your favorite hometown content, or there's just a particular actor or actress or someone you're really fond of, you can find that content and the proliferation of not just the diversity of content, which we've had for some time, but the improving quality of that content is really adding to the community, as Kit said, and the technology, as several of us mentioned, that those three things converging all at this time, along with consumer behavior changing, where there's that expectation of I want it now, when I want it, not at the correct time that I tune in, listening. I think all of that is adding to this this time and space.
Let's talk about one of the more difficult things, and that is discovery. I mean, there's 280,000 or whatever the number is of these things. How does a show find itself? Or the other way around?
Yeah, why don't I start there? I mean, I think there's a variety of things. I mean, certainly some places have access to great established listener bases, so you see some cross-promotion, a segment airing in an Ira Glass episode or getting heavy promotion. I mean, obviously, those are really few and far between. We see the opportunity to cross-promote amongst shows. So if someone's listening to a television podcast, maybe you're partnering with other television podcasts to cross-promote those shows. Also to have the talent appear on those shows and actually have them appear so people can say, hey, oh, that's really interesting. I'd like to check that out. Obviously, there's opportunities for social distribution and for people to recommend things within a community because the community is really important, like Kit was talking about. I think we find the most successful shows in our network are hosted by people who really engage with their community and really don't just record a show and head home, but they're on there, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter, engaging with the community and really developing an audience so that people come and bring their friends and come back and listen to more things. So I think it's a variety of things is my perspective.
I think also for us, it's, following on from that, the social media side is key. So, we've brought on people, like Russell Brand or Pixie Lott or Tom Jones even just coming on the platform now, who have huge social followings already. So they're creating, longer form audio, maybe it's 30, 35 minutes, whatever it might be. But on the platform, they're then taking, 8 to 9 seconds, pushing that to Twitter. They're taking 1 minute and 5 and pushing that to Facebook. They're doing, maybe something different, whether it's in WhatsApp or Snapchat or what have you. So it's leveraging the platforms, the distribution that's already there. It's putting content where people already exist, trying to bring them back to somewhere new, something that's out of their everyday kind of workflow or their life, is just a tough exercise. So using what's out there, but also knowing what length of audio works on what platform, but always use the long form and cut it down and just reuse that to increase the ROI on all their effort because talent's time poor. So you've got that whole piece of audio, use it, distribute it, and become a distributed media company, either by talent or by show or by radio station to proliferate the content.
So at Podcast One, we do a lot of educating to people that don't know about podcasts and how to get podcasts. So we reach out and use social channels to educate people on how to download podcasts, make sure they're educated on exactly how easy it is to consume this media. That being said, then we use our huge audience base to cross-promote. So someone like Dan Patrick will talk about Mark Schlereth's podcast, or Steve Austin will talk about Chris Jericho. And we got to go from there. And what research has told us, once people start to listen to this medium, they grab more and more. It becomes part of their weekly habit or daily habit, and they grab a bunch of different podcasts and consume more and more, and then share it with their social channels and talk about it. So
I'm a little bit of the outlier at the table here, or in the chairs, because I'm not really that involved with podcasting today. And part of the reason is that when we started Riveted, we were looking at how do you really scale the stories that are being created. And my background is mapping, digital mapping. And one of the challenges we had, and by the way, I'm saying this as I'm in awe of all the stuff that the podcasting has done as an industry, but I believe it's maybe a tenth or a hundredth of what it needs to be. And to me, one of the things that really has to be thought through is how do we organize the metadata consistently in the industry so that, a German car engineer at BMW can write some software and be able to pull the topics from all your podcasts so that it quickly comes together. And so this is one of the things that we've done at Riveted, is really think through the audio content. What is good audio? What is a good story? But also, what is the metadata that goes with it? You know, what are the topics? What are the categories you cover? What is? How do you characterize geography and location? How do you characterize time? And again, going back to my mapping days, the industry took off when the industry adopted a common map format that enabled all of the software engineers to figure out how to access the stories. And so just a very simple example is when we first started looking at podcasts, you know, we'd look at a 30, 40-minute podcast that had five segments on five different categories. And what I wanted to be able to do was to be able to pick each one of those categories and deliver it to different listeners. So because to us, you've got to get down to a segment level or story level and have that metadata associated with it. And so those are the kinds of things that I think as an industry, and we're much more thinking about this as a platform and delivery opportunity, but how do we create content that's easily searchable, followable, locatable based on your location, and really get that pinpoint targeting of the content? Because it's a simple problem to solve if there's good data coming into the cloud.
Well, let's dig in on that for a second. By the way, skip BMW, straight to Volkswagen. Great engineers. They'll solve your problem right away.
Great software.
Let's talk about metrics. So one of the problems, clearly one of the problems in the business, is the Fred Flintstone metrics that you're dealing with. Let's talk about the future and how you're compensating today and going forward. How are you going to have the metrics that the advertisers, I think, need to build out the advertising ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the biggest thing. I've been in digital since 96, and digital's driven off of data. I guess it kind of comes into one of the other areas with, the reliance on iTunes as a distribution platform. The data that comes off the back of iTunes is next to non-existent. The big issue with all of the data, truth be told, for a digital media planner buyer is, yeah, so you know how many downloads you got, but how many listens did you get? And ultimately, that's the only number that counts, is how many listens did you get? This could be easily solved. I mean, on the app and on our network, we've built kind of a locker into the app that even if a podcast is downloaded, once somebody starts listening to it, it sends a tracking beacon to the locker. Then when that person comes back on Wi-Fi, it sends back to us. We know it's been listened to or not. None of that exists on any of the other apps out there that iTunes pushes. They don't give you any of that data. So, you know, even, you know, there's a massive opportunity around in-read advertising and, you know, delivering it, especially when you think about ad blocking. You know, ad blocking can't do anything to that. 25% of all traffic is now ad blocked on the web and on mobile. So there's an opportunity in this industry now. If we can get proper data that's transparent, that we really know it's a human being and not a bot that's listened to that content, and we've sold advertising against it, there's an opportunity for podcasting, audio on demand, whatever you call it, to actually jump ahead of video and display advertising and actually lead out this field. But it's all about the metadata. So, I mean, the other thing that we do really quickly, I mean, every piece of audio that comes up to us, we run that through autonomy. So we turn it from speech to text, and we can tag all of the keywords in there. We can put breaks in that. We can do all of that stuff. And, you know, we've spent 2 years putting the platform in place to hopefully embrace the technology moving forward. And, as you say, a unified platform and a standard would be great. And I know the guys at Nielsen are working on it really hard, and ComScore. So I think it's in motion.
Brendan, you just invested, I think, in a technology platform. Can you kind of walk us through, I mean, the early days of the Slate platform were just simple SoundCloud files. Where's it going with you?
Yeah, I think for us, we saw an opportunity. So Panoply is a network of premium podcasts ranging from independents to, you know, established media brands from Inc. and Real Simple and Sports Illustrated and Huffington Post. And what we saw as an opportunity to, when we're helping these, whether we're helping them with production or certainly on the sales piece, we felt that it was a technology opportunity to really help them gain better insights, both into the CMS side in terms of actually producing shows, but also dynamic ad insertion, which allows, you know, you to monetize a back catalog or you know, an older set of listens that people, when they find evergreen content, they're really engaged to go back and listen to some of the earliest episodes, as well as the metrics. On the metrics side, I think there's a couple of distinctions. One is, as Rob talked about, is actual listenership, and I think that's something that, you know, we're all working hard to figure that out. The other is for the producer themselves to understand, where's that listening taking place? Now, for a lot of us up here, I think we'd say that 60 to 70% of listens are coming through iTunes, at least. It's a pretty common statistics I hear in the marketplace. But there's a proliferation of apps emerging that allows for a broader set of diversification, whether that be Spotify or Stitcher or other platforms that are entering the space. You can guess who those might be. I think there's going to be more and more opportunity to understand, as a publisher, where's your content being consumed and what are those platforms. So, you know, Apple has certainly been the 800-pound gorilla, but there's better perspective that we think we can give our partners, and that's part of the reason for the acquisition was to develop a set of technology tools that they can use to produce shows, but also give them a lot of data on the back end so they can better understand their audience and whether it's, you know, to Rob's point about was a podcast listened to, but not just that, understand where did the listening stop taking place. So if I'm creating a 40-minute show but everyone's stopping listening at 20 minutes, well, that's a really valuable piece of data for me to understand. Or they're listening to two of the three segments I'm producing. That helps me be more educated about what I'm producing. So that's a little bit of what I'd say.
So I wanted to just kind of explain a little bit. There's kind of three parts to this question that really get back to the core of kind of online radio technology going back 10, 12, even 15 years, is that there's downloads, which is download directly to your hard drive, and then there's what's called progressive play downloads, right, which is just clicking like a player on a website, and then there's true streaming. So, you know, there's three pieces of this, and that's why it's confusing right now to the whole industry, because the problem is that the download is playing through players that we're not getting any visibility on actual play data on that. So the problem is we're tracking a download, and then the progressive download playbacks, we're able to see some of that data as kind of byte stream requests is what they call it, and then the streaming side of it, which Spreaker's involved in. So we have two sides. We have downloads and progressive playback, and then also we have true streaming that we use in there too, which is the Icecast platform and those kind of technologies. So we're seeing kind of a convergence of all these things starting to happen. If you look at Spotify and you look at some of the music streaming services, they're starting to support podcasts only in the streaming side. So it just creates this kind of mix of different delivery technologies that makes it very difficult to come up with a standard around this.
Kit, you guys have been in for a while. A lot of the advertising has been direct response. Kind of walk me through where all that's going in your view.
Sure. When we started working with advertisers before Podcast One really existed, it was mostly myself and Adam Carolla. And Adam, there's no one better in my world in terms of selling a product. And everything has been based on, you know, using a code or tracking sales. And based on the success rates, direct response advertisers have not only jumped into Adam's shows, but a lot of shows, and supported the growth of this this medium. So over the last couple years at Podcast One, we've looked deeply into all the different things that these guys have been talking about. They're spot on. There's a lot in terms of the technology, and we use kind of a blend between technology to serve advertising and record you know, tracking impressions and stuff like that. But we also use surveys. We work very closely with Edison Research to have a better understanding of who's listening to our podcasts, how long they're listening, what type of shows they're listening to, what devices. So we have a much better understanding of where people are coming from, and that has helped us, you know, work with over 60 major brands past the direct response world. You know, people like Mazda, Geico, those type of clients are jumping into it. So it's been an evolution, and direct response is still a very, very big part of what we're doing in the podcasting space. But brands are excited about this medium. They understand the connection, the growth, and what everybody's talking about here with technology is only going to help get us to the next level.
I want to go back on the time spent for a sec. So with Pierre Brevard, the CMO of Westwood, we put together a blog piece about the length of listening, which was audio boom data. Thank you for that. But it was kind of startling. You know, I think a lot of podcasters have a sense that because you've selected to download their content, that they have this license to go on as long as they wish, this permission-based whatever. And yet the mortality rate, I mean, at 7 minutes in, 40% of the people are gone. By the time 20 to 30 minutes is in, two-thirds are gone. Talk to me about what's going on there and how do we fix that?
I think it kind of, again, it mirrors where people are consuming that content. I think maybe Boom is slightly different from some of the other guys because we do have shorter content because the platform's also used for pushing to Twitter and Facebook and all of those things. I guess what it comes down to, I mean, before being at Boom, I was at YouTube for 4.5 years. You know, we saw the consumption rates there drop all the way down. Average YouTube view now is 43 seconds of video. And that's just the pattern that the people within those environments live to. Yeah. Now, clearly a lot of the compelling content these guys are carrying, and we have as well, it is longer form. You know, for me, unless it's very compelling, people just don't have more than 30 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever to sit down and listen to stuff. It's okay if you're a developer. And up until this point, most podcasts have been listened to by developers because they sit there tapping away for 14 hours a day. If we want to get to the millennials, we want to get onto different platforms, we want to open out the reach and the scope of what we're doing and look to bring advertisers that will come with that audience as well, you have to look at the length of the content. It's just vital. Like, say, for us, Twitter, it's 8 seconds. In Facebook, it's 1 minute and 2 seconds. And, yeah, they're engagement platforms. They bring them to longer form, use the outreach and all of that. But, again, a listen to listen. We can serve pre- and post-roll advertising into Twitter and Facebook and iTunes. So a listen to listen and add impressions and add impression. Get the right content for the right platform.
Brendan?
Yeah, I think one thing we think about, too, is my co-founder and chief content officer, Andy Bowers, likes to say, you know, let the host earn that listenership. Yeah. So, you know, starting off a podcast, as we're doing a lot of these days, starting with shows, even with well-established personalities or media brands, it's still earn that listenership. So we tend to tell them, hey, try not to go more than, say, 15 minutes, give or take, when you're starting this off, maybe even less, to give people a test. And that's even different from a show that's intended to be like a daily, 2-minute update or something that some folks work on in news, but this is, kind of more magazine-y, long-form type content. Even there, starting shorter so that people can get a sample, because there's this daunting challenge of people who are scrolling through iTunes and they see podcast length 102 minutes, I've never heard of this. I mean, that's back to the discovery conversation, is am I really going to spend an hour or 2 minutes on something that's just emerging or I've never listened to before? So that's what we try to encourage, our partners and content creators to really think about that length, to Rob's point, because consumption patterns are, all over the map in terms. But what I will say is, once people are engaged, these are the most engaged listeners you will find. I was just in San Francisco for our political GabFest, which is a Slate show, and we sold out a 1,300-seat venue, people paying $30 to $60 a ticket to watch three people sit on a stage like this with literally a microphone and a table. The engagement is incredible. And as you'll find, I think all of us would tell you, and the data supports it, that people who listen to podcasts listen to 3 to 7 of those a week, a large portion of them. They are, it's just like once you go to a DVR, you're not going to go back to watching your favorite show at Thursday at 8 o'clock. The same is true with podcasting, is that these people are engaged, they spend money, whether it's on subscriptions or live events, and of course they respond to advertising because it's compelling from the hosts, and they respond to the brand advertisers as well. So it's a really great platform that engages that.
Podcast listeners spend about 2 hours more with audio than non-podcast listeners. It's quite huge. You can solve the TSL problem, though, just by eliminating talk about the weather at the beginning of a podcast and what they're wearing. That's 6 minutes right there. John, you must see the churn with Rivet, where you're serving up topics and people are choosing either to listen or not. Walk us through that.
Well, and we have actually focused much more on shorter audio. I think the average length of our stories is a couple of minutes. And the interesting thing about it is that if somebody's listening for 30 or 40 minutes, we're getting 25, 30 opportunities to tell different stories. So it's a completely different experience than the podcasting. And, one of the – I love the Abraham Lincoln, quote of apologizing about the length of the letter because he didn't have the time to write a shorter one. And I think the important thing is that audio listening is probably one of the most intimate experiences out there. And there's an obligation of people when they're producing audio to basically, as you said, earn that listening. We also know that there's a bit of a, if you're listening to audio, you're probably doing something else. You're driving, you're working out. So there's a bit of the set it and forget it as long as it's good. So if you're ending the audio, then you really, you're making the person do something that they wouldn't naturally do. So I think basically every story is, there's no too long or too short of a time. It really is finding the right time for the right story. And that's one of the great things about, internet radio, audio, podcasting, is you're not answering to the clock. You're really answering to the consumer.
Okay, I was going to say, because of all the sponsorship dollars coming in, it's afforded people to have programming and take people from successful radio programs or NPR programs or whatnot that have had experience in this medium for a long time and understand the tricks of the trade, per se, in terms of leading to the next segment of a show, promoting and engaging with the fan base. And I think there are certain ways to use this technology to make sure people stay engaged for a longer amount of time. We find that our daily shows are consumed, at a high level, but our weekly shows, people, if we don't post a Steve Austin show, the fan base gets extremely upset. We see it on all our communities. It's part of their habit. This is what they do, and they love these guys, immensely. And they search for this content. They want to hear the stories, and it's very intimate. So we find that people really do consume for a long time.
Yeah, I want to kind of mirror that as well. If you look at the history of podcasts, I've been involved in the podcasting space for over 10 years now, is that most of the most popular shows in podcasting today are over 45 minutes long. So they are the shows that have engaged audiences, and I think that really dovetails to what a lot of these guys are saying, is that it's all about the engagement of the audience. If they're committed to your show, they will listen to the whole thing. And if it takes two commute trips, you know, the average length of a commute, I think, is 25 minutes one way. So if you think about it in that light, probably a 30-minute, show makes a lot of sense. They can listen to it going to work and maybe listen to a different podcast going home. So if you kind of think about it in that way, but if they're really engaged, they'll listen to two parts of that show. They'll listen to it going in, and they'll listen to it going home. So length is not a downside in this space, and I think it's all about the content. It's all about how engaged that host is with its audience. And, I mean, I do a show every week that's an hour and a half long, and then I do a show that's 30 minutes long. So there's different focuses with that content, and it's a different type of show. So, it needs to be appropriate to the content that you're producing. I think that's the big message. And there's certainly a place for short-form content, but there's a place for really long-form. There's extremely successful podcasts that are 2 and 3 hours long, surprisingly enough.
That's a long commute. Sticking with you for a sec, Rob. So you have a lot of, I don't know what to call them. We'll call them amateur audio. There was an estimate that I read that there are 300,000 podcasts, of which a third are dead, meaning they cut about 6 shows, 10 shows, whatever it is.
They pod-faded is the term that's used.
Okay.
Yeah.
So pod-faded, good, I'll remember that one. What's going on there? Is it just too hard? Do these people find out that it's not as easy as clicking on the mic?
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that want to have their own radio show, right? They want to host it. They want to do this, and they're really passionate about it. But what they get into it is they maybe start out maybe thinking that they're going to do something that maybe is a little different than probably what they should be doing based on their lifestyle, based on their family situation. A lot of them are just doing it as a hobby. They've got a full-time job. They have a family. But they have this dream that they want to do this, and they want to make money from it, and they want to quit their day job to be a podcaster. That's been the theme in the podcasting space for 10 years is I want to do a show and quit my job and get paid to do a podcast. And it's a great ambition, but most people can't make that transition, right? So they'll do 5 or 6 episodes, and they'll what's called pod fade. They'll basically stop producing it, and those episodes will live in iTunes for forever, as long as they keep paying their hosting bill, and those shows will continue to exist, but there's just no new episodes. And so you're exactly right. It's probably at least a third to probably about a third of the iTunes 300,000, which is what they just told me this last week. You know, I was down there spending some time at Apple, and that's what they told me, that they crossed the 300,000 mark of podcasts in their catalog. So yeah.
So if there are 300,000, that's a lot, and they're all in this pile of how do I find it, according to Rob Walsh over at Libsyn, about 1% track any audience over, say, 50,000. Does that sound right to you? There's only like 3,000 podcasts then that are
absolutely
traffic.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I would guess probably the top 1% accounts for about 95% of the total traffic. You know, and again, I know one of the areas that you're interested in talking about, you know, how do we make it more mainstream? How do we commercialize it and all of that? And, you know, hands up, I'm not an audio person by background. As I said, I came from YouTube. But all of my team are audio people. And the one thing that I've learned over the last couple of 3 years, to make really great audio, it doesn't happen by luck more often than not. Has to be scripted, it has to be produced, it's got to be imaged, it's got to be a quality product. And, you know, 95% of everything that's a podcast is just not a quality product. And, you know, I think that's where radio stations, commercial radio stations, have a massive opportunity now. They've got the skills, they've got the reach, they've got the brand, they've got the talent. Take that from being on air in linear and start converting some of that and adding a little extra to it so it's engaging and it's creative again, which is the way audio used to be. Radio stations used to be creative. They used to be imaginative. They could get back to that. They have all of the building blocks to actually come in and just blow the lid off this industry.
A farm team. Imagine that. It used to be in the old days you had your night jock and your overnight jock. That was your training ground, but why not let it be in the podcast sector? I wanted to get back to Kit for a sec. So you have about 200 podcasts in the network. How many are big hits? I mean, how many, you know, going back to Rob's issue, how many are really driving the traffic?
You know, it's interesting. We test a lot of shows. We will produce a lot of shows. We'll cancel a lot of shows that just don't work or it doesn't work with the personality. And based on you know, the fact that it's hard being a talk show host, it's not easy. It's hard being a great interviewer, and it's hard taking an audience to come back again after they hear the first show. So we have a lot of hits. You know, we don't go past 200 because, one, we find it mandatory that we have to monetize those shows. We want to do the best we possibly can for the partners involved. We could take on another 200, 300 shows if we wanted to. It's just not in the cards right now. But what we look for when we go out and we try to find a new show or a new show host, we try to find a talent that already has a social media following, a community. A lot of what we do now with The Chive or Barstool Sports, they have a huge, huge fan base and a huge blog that it just makes a lot of sense that let's tap into that fan base and let's tell a story. Let's take it a little bit further past the blog or the Twitter handle or whatever it might be so you can have a real conversation. So we go to places that already have a fan base or have a community and then we take that to the next level. So that's what we do at Podcast One.
Brad, do we have time to do a question or two here from the audience? Who's giving up their mic? Okay, check mine, it'll be a little tricky.
Sure. Any questions from the audience? Yes.
Raymond Burkhart with Flowing Streams. My question is, what emerging thought, idea, or innovation in podcasting is giving you a wow moment in the industry right now?
Great question. I'll start, and maybe you jump in. I mean, I think one thing that, you know, it's quick. People are quick to point to Serial as an example, but I think the thing that what I would say is the creativity that's coming to this space on the content side. I mean, I think you've seen a lot of, you know, people sitting around a mic talking, conversations, interviews, talking about news in this week. But I think what's really cool is what you're seeing with whether it's a Serial or a Limetown or some of these really scripted shows that are coming to the marketplace that are saying, you know what, you know, I have a script that never got picked up by Hollywood. This could work in audio. Or I have some really cool, compelling piece of content that really works in the audio format and advertisers want to be around and they want to engage with. So that's one thing that for me continues to evolve and continue to emerge is the variety of types of content we're seeing, and it's just growing and evolving.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, we're probably going to spend something like $20 million over the next 2 years commissioning content. And that's great for our own network, but actually the driver behind that for us and kind of the wow thing for me is creating that audio digital first, podcast first, and then syndicating it back to radio groups. So we did that with Russell Brand. We've done it with a few others as well that have gone back into, you know, places like Cumulus and Global Radio in the UK and Southern Cross in Australia. So podcasts can create digital first and then push it back. For me, that's a wow.
Let's take another question if we have time.
One more question.
Eric Westby, WGBH. What advice would you give to someone who is talking to a broadcast program director and then always hears back the dreaded C word, cannibalization? Whenever I talk about how important it is to grow digital audio, there's always a fear that it'll be at the expense of broadcast.
Another great question.
For me, we're living in a distributed media age at this point. radio can choose to either join that conversation or be excluded from it. A listen to listen to listen, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Facebook, in your mobile app, on a website, it's on iTunes. If you can monetize all those points of engagement, the more you can distribute and broadcast that content, the better it's going to be for you. There is no cannibalization.
It's just another way to touch your community and involve your community and get them to listen to both radio and their audio. This is a community. That's just another place to grab them.
Yeah, and it's also an opportunity for a local station to make content that's appealing to a national audience, too, and maybe grow a national advertising business, and which is happening in the public radio space today.
Brad, can we do one more?
Yep, stretch it and take one more.
George Olicasta from GFK. My question is there any place virtual place like the equivalent of YouTube, where is it possible to find a podcast?
So like the Rotten Tomatoes sort of thing are you talking about? Or just a giant pile of podcasts?
I guess there's a few places, really. I mean, Stitcher obviously has a whole raft of stuff. Without blowing trumpets of boom, we work with, 6,000 of the world's biggest broadcasters, bringing all their audio on demand and podcasting in there. And it's kind of, through the AI and the recommendation, you hopefully can find stuff. But there's loads of places out there. SoundCloud would be another example, obviously music-focused. But, it's user-generated type content as well as some professional content. But there are a few options.
One final question in before we got to run here. We have not talked about subscription models. So the Glenn Becks and the Kim Commandos of the world, I mean, they've already built that. Where are you guys on all of that? What do you think?
Well, I am glad you brought that up, because one of the wows that I think is sitting right up here with us is what Slate is doing with the way they're basically extending their business into audio and then bundling it with their digital properties. And I actually think that subscription model is a wow, and because I know we've had a lot of conversations with news organizations, magazines, and others who have audience, they have content, but it's dwindling. And one of the ways they can, like you guys did, which is let's add premium digital products like audio and let's bundle it with a subscription. Let's add more value to either slow the decline or actually get new audience and price increase. So I believe that in addition to advertising, subscriptions is really going to become a major way that audio and podcasts are supported.
I would agree with that just very quick. I mean, we're doing it with The Sun and The Times, putting audio behind their paywall to kind of bulk out what they're doing. And guys like Vice Media through Vice Audio are going to be doing exactly the same thing moving forward.
Last word, Brendan.
Yeah, so just to be clear, Panoply is part of the Slate Group, and Slate is, a partner within Panoply. So we work with, 60 shows, 15 of which are Slate. But what John was talking about was at Slate, what we launched was a premium membership platform whereby people would, Slate is free, remains free, ad-supported, et cetera. But what we did was we extended this platform to people to subscribe for $5 a month or $50 a year, where they could go in and get additional content. So what that meant was for their favorite podcast, instead of having three segments, they'd get a fourth segment. For content that they really love, they would also, in some cases, we would pull out advertising for those shows. And so what that meant was, and frankly, 60 to 70% of people that signed up for the platform, the subscription platform, 60 to 70% of them were activating the custom podcast feed, which was not, frankly, a simple process where they clicked the button. They had to go through a step or two to actually download this. So they were getting bonus content. They're getting engagement from the editors at Slate. There was all these, behind-the-scenes looks at things, but they were also getting audio content, and that was a huge driver of the revenue there. So for us, we feel like with digital media platforms, to John's point, there's some real exciting opportunities for people to monetize and audio leading the way. And again, whether that's bonus content, Dan Savage does it where he has 45 minutes of his show, and then if you pay more, you get an extra 45 minutes, and people pay for it. And it's $3 to $4 a month, and people are willing to do that. So I think there's a lot of opportunities. I'm glad you brought it up. Thanks.
Podcasting is a new black. Thank you, guys. You're wonderful.
Thank you.